The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by Me Audio. So here's the deal. If you've ever seen me in a live stream or in an interview or some other kind of video, you've probably seen me wearing some fancy earbuds. For the last couple years, my work buds have been almost exclusively from Me Audio. Excellent drivers, fantastic accessories, and both my wife and I had our ears scanned by the folks at Me Audio for custom molded ear tips. Super comfy. The MX line of Pro in-ear monitors is one of the easiest lineups to understand, starting at $60 and built around actual professional use. Detailed sound and durable construction, but also with some fun options like customizable faceplates. Even if you're not working on stage or in studio, Pro solutions like these are fantastic audio options, and they don't need to break the bank. And the company also supports a lineup of consumer gear with options for true wireless and noise-canceling Bluetooth earbuds, adapters for TVs to stream your audio to nicer headphones, and headsets for kids to help control the volume on fresh, developing ears. I can't stress that last one enough. We have to start kids out with healthier listening habits. It's a great combo, high-quality audio gear built by a team of folks with recording-grade use in mind, but at consumer-friendly prices. But of course, I can do you one better. If you shop the kit at meaudio.com and use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, you can save an additional 10% over their already competitive prices. Once again, meaudio.com, M-E-E-audio.com. Shop some fun kit, promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, 10% off. Keep your ears and your wallet happy at the same time. I want to thank the folks at Me Audio for hooking up the promo code. Now, let's get on with the show. Okay, I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, sometimes you just got to turn it off and on again. Welcome to another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I am Juan Carlos Bagnell, a.k.a. Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this terribly named podcast series. And of course, what we really care about is the QA part of this conversation, the question and answer, making this an interactive conversation. So we talk about the news, and I love it when you know you're going live and nothing is working the way that it should be. So I'm fresh off a reboot. My internet connection's still looking pretty shaky, but I've got yellow green signal as opposed to red. So we should be able to muscle through. But we're going to try and power through. We're going to try and keep this going. We're going to try and keep it alive. And yeah, it's always fun. So I hope everyone out there had a phenomenal weekend. I hope you had some lovely time, catching up with family, with friends, getting to unplug for a bit, and then doing fun things with your tech as opposed to always just talking about the tech. But I'm already seeing a great lineup in this live chat right now. Let's see, we've got Root Knight, Heike, Aditya Anil, McCorkran, Dank Pickman, Gary the Fireman. Hey, what's up, Gary? Dave Burns, Steve, Q3 Becker, Gabaletta, Awesome Possum, Gormlord, Rinesh, JMX Warrior, Simon Says Hypno, Tech Loving Mama. Everyone says hey! Nick Fell, thank you for sticking. Raymonda, thank you for sticking with. I really did just throw in the last 2 minutes of my little intro there. I threw the whole computer through a reboot, and I seem to be getting better connection speeds now. It's always the funness of trying to get this stuff up and running, and you know, I'm duct taping this entire setup together to try and make every week happen. It's a tightrope walk that I can't always say I stick the landing. You don't have landings in tightrope walking. Well, I guess you do kind of have tightrope. Never mind. That's a terrible metaphor, and I'm over it. Hashtag some last minute reboot guy accurate. Oh, and Gary the Fireman right out the gate with some tier one subs to Drew 4410, Vader's World, Tay and Dalo, Cyber Birthday 10, and Gormlord. Gary, thank you so much. That is phenomenal. I really do appreciate it, and especially just for what we just did right here, trying to get the stream up and running. I can use all the help I can get. Well, we've got a whole slate of news to talk about. For the gadget block, I definitely want to circle back, share some thoughts on Xperia and TCL. We talked about it a bit on Best of Our Week, which we're going to talk about in housekeeping. We're going to talk about how we talked about what we're going to talk about in housekeeping, and just some other thoughts on competition, what we expect from manufacturers, and then how we talk about different products. Again, it's some of the soapboxy stuff that I cover regularly on this channel, but I still want to kind of find some of the happy, because if it's just we're gonna rail against this, like jumping into what was it, Twitter Spaces? I forget what their audio thing was, but there is definitely a conversation brewing about how reviewers go about their business. What is a review? What are the expectations of the reviewer and the audience? And it just seems to be the right time to kind of follow through. Not it. There's no one answer and there's no one conclusion. This is an ongoing and evolving style of media and style of commentary, so we should continue to follow up and check it out. Dave Burns, 1300 is a little steep, but you get much more phone than last year. I can't wait for it to get panned because the camera app decided to lean into the professional camera vibe. So yeah, it's yeah, there's gonna be a lot of cranky one talking about Xperia 1 Mark III, and not because of the phone. Utane Pico 1 is saying, "Hello, one bagel." I used to work at a bagel shop, so I got that a lot. I would like one bagel. And Utane Pico is also subscribed at Tier 1. Well, thanks for jumping on, man. Oh, and apparently we're in line for a hype train. All right. Yeah, I've already been derailed a couple times. You know what? Why don't we cut through? Why don't we chew through housekeeping, get that out of the way, and then we've got some. The news block is a little bit slimmer, and I keep saying this, and someday I'll actually be able to live up to what I'm describing, but I don't expect the news block to be too heavy. So, from Doomer, my computational photography. Yes, because cameras lie and camera reviewers miss the point, and then what are we left with? We're left with a very uncompetitive marketplace. All right, housekeeping. I have been flying to try and get a couple different projects done, and I'm trying to front load. Like I'm way behind on some audio gear. There's some headphones I really want to be talking about. I want to do another 20/20 hearing video on protecting children's hearing. But at the same time, it's like there are these accessories. Like I'm really excited to talk about some of these accessories. So one that I finally got out the door, and I shouldn't have put like I put this like stupid rule on myself for reviewing products like fitness trackers. Like I really want to check out these battery claims. So when Amazfit sent over the T-Rex Pro, and this thing legitimately gets like 7 to 10 days of battery life on my kind of usage, which is very low to moderate kind of fitness tracking, but I get a lot of notifications. Yeah, that review took me way longer than it should have to finish. This watch is a champ. I very much enjoy it. The video will go into more detail as to why I am so taken with this fitness tracking product, but it was also dumb of me to put this like th this threshold on how I was. I'm gonna to honestly really dig into all of the nooks and crannies, and you're like, yeah, I probably could have finished this video like 2 weeks ago. It takes so long to cycle this thing. What am I doing? Why am I making my job harder? And Dave Burns saying my GTR 2E is doing okay with battery life. And again, Dave Burns just landed, I believe, just got it a day or two ago. That's another Amazfit fitness tracker. I've been very taken with them, but I really want to hear from folks that are working out more regularly and tracking more diligently than I am. So, because I don't believe that your battery life, when you're really hitting the GPS, when you're really, you know, doing always on heart rate tracking, when you're doing the blood ox, I think you're going to be hitting the battery harder than I will. And I think that's a more important data point to start comparing. My fitness tracking needs are probably lower level. But the big video, and again, the commentary on this is very casual. I mean, like I set up a camera, I'm just sort of talking to the camera, and I'm not doing my normal, like, quick cut, punchy edit, you know, lots of B-roll, all that kind of stuff. But to accrue the data, to feel like I could competently discuss this issue took days of checking battery life, checking temperatures, running tests, playing games. And it is kind of a head trip. Like, well, I feel like I need to play this game for 30 minutes. And, you know, like if I could go back in time and tell, like, you know, Super Nintendo era me that was going to be a part of my job, I'd be like, that's awesome. You've succeeded in life. I'm so proud of me and you, me. But, you know, the reality of it is like I'm sitting down and I'm forced to play a game because I need to capture a battery stat. Like, I'm not enjoying that. That's just a part of the job. So I'm, of course, dancing around this video. Man, performance testing is getting hard. It's really difficult. This is the OnePlus 9 Pro throttled gaming. Are you getting premium performance? And this is another step of an evolving conversation as to what we should expect this year from premium tier devices. And increasingly, like, I've got this pendulum swing happening. Galaxy S21 comes out. I am not impressed with the performance that I see from the Galaxy S21. I'm not impressed with all the things Samsung cut out of the phone to try and achieve a lower price point. I'm not happy about the accessory situation. I don't like the build. I mean, like, I think the Galaxy S20 is a better phone if you were wanting to stay in the Samsung ecosystem. And, you know, what I needed was more data. The OnePlus 9 comes out, and in my more CPU-heavy tasks, the OnePlus 9 easily, you know, hangs with and outperforms the S21. It seems to run more consistently. It seems to handle thermal load better. Everything seems to be great. So I start off the commentary there. And then we start seeing some other issues with gaming performance getting throttled. That's where I've got a blind spot, because a lot of the games that we're seeing the poor performance from the OnePlus 9 are not games that I play. And I want to spend extra time benchmarking games that I don't like to play. You know, when I'm really trying to chew through this Dead Cells DLC, and I only get to do it in very sporadic chunks. And also, if you like Dead Cells, let me tell you, playing Dead Cells on Android is like Dead Cells hard mode. It's like whenever I get to play Dead Cells on a proper controller, it's like, oh, this is easy. From Tech Love and Mama, I'm still not happy with what Samsung took from the Note 10 Plus to the Note 20 Ultra and sad bear emoticon. I'm kind of with you there. So if we really care, and I feel we should really care when we're talking about devices that are in the premium tier, you know, above $700, peaking over $1,000. I do not understand this mentality of choosing the label and then excusing the compromises of that label so that you can be on the winning team. $1,000 is $1,000 is $1,000. You know, you're not going to win me with those arguments. Oh, well, I don't use my phone for any of that. Then why'd you spend $1,000? Don't spend $1,000. Don't talk to your family and friends. You're a bad techie. You're not good at this. And you're going to convince them to get, you know, a phone that they really don't need. And increasingly, like, my family is all hyped up on mid-rangers right now. Like, you know, can I spend less on my new phone this year than I did on my old phone from 2 years ago? So, to properly describe what's going on takes so much more work than running a quick Geekbench. And I put out the call in the video. I've put out this call on numerous episodes of this podcast. But if there's anyone out there, I'm shouting into the void of the internet here. If there's anyone out there that you know of that consistently tests phone performance by using real world apps, video editing, audio editing and recording, file compression, document work, not Geekbench, not AnTuTu. You don't use synthetic benchmarks to get your work done. So the testing protocol of something like Geekbench is running tiny, teeny little snippets of tests back to 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 back. These new processors, these new SoCs, are really good at a short spike of performance and then a recovery, and a short spike of performance and a recovery. They don't seem to be much better at sustained performance. And the only way we can take a look at that in real world, like in a way that actually delivers some kind of prediction and expectation of performance, is by using a real app. And then just looking at how it rolls, just looking at how it performs. So if anyone else is out there, I mean, like, there are a few that are doing this for gaming. Gaming, we actually care about looking at FPS, and we care about looking at thermals, and we care about looking at battery life. And there are a handful of reviewers that are keeping up with that. There is more that we do on a phone. And if the phone is more productivity focused, then we should have expectations of a higher degree of productivity. If a phone is more content creator focused, then we should have expectations of not only shooting content, but maybe also finishing content from this platform. And increasingly we're seeing, you know, like when I was a kid, if I wanted to shoot a short movie, like I had to use film or I could like get like a VHS camcorder and have absolutely garbage footage. But, you know, what kept me from exploring some of the stuff that I wanted to try when I was younger was not having access to a camera, not being able to, you know, develop film, not being able to edit any film that I would have developed. An entirely new generation of content creators and storytellers and filmmakers are starting with their phones, and not just, well, they shoot some clips and then they take it to a really fancy workstation that they spend a lot of money on. No, 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 no. I'm seeing short horror films that are shot and finished on the phone. So this is the next generation of accessibility and content and creative storytelling. And to act like, well, I mean, $1,000 phone, I mean, that's just so you can have really nice Snapchats, you know, is completely reductive. And you can miss me with anyone who says average consumer spending over $1,000. So, rambling. I'm all keyed up from like having to reset the stream. It at least seems to be hanging in there a bit more consistently than I mean, at one point it dropped to it dropped to 50 bits per second the stream rate, and you're like, I cannot stream at 50 bits per second. All right, moving right along. This was a video that I kind of overlooked. I shot it. I had to send the Galaxy S21 back. TK was just letting me borrow it because I knew I wasn't going to spend a ton of time on the Galaxy S21 after that initial reaction. But I did get an audio review out. This is the Galaxy S21 audio deep dive, which is only half of an audio review. And it is, it's just so weird. It still feels so strange. Excuse me. I have been testing audio in some form or fashion for a long time. I can't even remember when my first audio test videos went up, but I want to say it was probably, I think I started doing speaker sample tests with the HTC One M7. And it was one of the reasons why they brought me on at Pocket Now was the audio commentary and then the camera deep dive reviews that I would make. And picking up an expensive phone and not having anything to complement the headphone performance is just so bizarre to me. It's just so strange. And I still haven't gotten used to it. Like it was a stark change last year when headphone jacks were basically gone from Galaxies. And this year, like some of the improvements for USB DACs are fine, but like no pass-through. Like there is no DAC in the Galaxy S21. There is nothing to output a signal for headphone owners. You have to buy some type of adapter, some type of Bluetooth solution. You have no option. Or even like the OnePlus 9 Pro still has audio pass through. Like so, if you have, where is it? If you've got just the inert, floppy dongle from OnePlus, the DAC is actually pretty decent. It puts out a respectable audio quality, and that's not on the Galaxy S21. You plug in a pass through dongle, and it just goes, "Oh, USB device not recognized, man. You just don't be broke." And like, this is not the future I want. I want better future, more tech, not less. Root Night 5. Well, you can still test the out of the box dongle. Oh, wait. Yeah, I mean, Bluetooth is one solution. I've been working with the folks at Qualcomm. I can tell you all about Snapdragon Sound, and I'm very excited about some of the improvements to consumer branding and consumer education and tying up different things like codecs and fast pair settings just under one label. Awesome. There are times I just want to plug in a really nice pair of headphones that I already own on a cable and listen in very high quality. In it to, with an experience that I cannot currently replicate with any of the wireless solutions out there. So, from Do More, how would someone know if their phone has audio pass through or not? You won't. I this is terrible. I'm about to do like the worst Patreon plug ever. As far as I know, the only way for you to know that is to subscribe to my Patreon, and you'll only be able to know if I've reviewed the phone. So I haven't had my hands on a Xiaomi Mi 11 or Mi 11 Ultra. Can't tell you if there's audio pass through. I can tell you that there is audio pass through on the OnePlus 9 Pro. Again, audio commentary is so maligned right now, and basically the techie world has given up. Like there's no follow through conversation. The audiophile conversation around the LG announcement that they were pulling out of the smartphone business was so much more mature than most of the techie conversation about LG. You saw a handful of videos go up going, "Man, this sucks. I have an LG V30. I have an LG V40. I don't flip my phone every year. I have this great phone that powers my headphones really, really well, and I'm going to stick with it." And you're like, "Yeah, audiophiles don't flip gear like techies, but they care. They care to know that this hardware is in there." And it's a shame because it's like one less option for those folks who didn't want to put more stress on their USB port or don't want to go to a hybrid DAC, like a Bluetooth, pass-through DAC, or they don't want to go back to two devices just to have a nice premium audio experience. But they don't buy that many phones. So you end up stuck. If they were buying their phones every year and the audiophile community were really backing that, which seems so wasteful for what it is that they care about, that would be a different story. All right. Oh yes, because I had to reboot. None of my tabs have loaded. We did have a longer conversation about the Xperia 1 Mark III and the TCL 20. Best of our week, episode 17. Me and TK Bay. We revived Sony Watch because there was a new update for the Xperia 1 Mark II. We got the April update, and it also came with a pretty sizable chunk of other fixes and stuff. So where Android 11 was kind of off to a rocky start on the Xperia 1, and I feel like so many Android 11 devices just need the hard reset at this point. I know it doesn't seem like Android 11 was a significantly changed update over Android 10, but there's enough stuff happening under the hood that I would recommend. This is the time that you want to take, do some spring to summer cleaning, scrub out the phone, start totally fresh. And I think you're in for a better experience than just, you know, restoring a backup or just trying to go direct Android 10 to Android 11. I feel like the only phone that I did the 10 to 11 update and like kind of had smooth sailing, but it was also because we got like immediate, you know, OTAs was the Pixel. Everything else has gotten sticky in some situations. So anyway, yeah, we revived Sony Watch. And actually, I probably should have gone all the way back to the Xperia 1 Mark 1, you know, this week on Sony Watch, because I just got my second update for Android 11 on the Xperia 1 Mark 1, and it's been so nice. So again, if you were shopping premium tier and you want good software support, for some reason, we don't consider Sony in that conversation when they're actually pretty good. But yeah, we're going to talk a little bit more in the gadget block, Xperia 1 Mark 3, what your folks, what your feelings are on sort of where we're going with premium tier phones. And then also some chatter on the TCL 22, TCL 20 Pro, TCL 20L, and TCL 20S. I'm very anxious about, excited and anxious about devices that are really trying to hit this mid-ranger 5G competition territory. Then to wrap up housekeeping, I had a nice change of pace. I teased it on last week's show, but it's finally out. Brenton on Tour does a podcast called The Journey for Java, and he likes to have other people on, like musicians and I think he's had an artist and just coffee lovers in general. But it's a coffee podcast. They talk about coffee. They talk about their favorite ways to brew coffee, like what types of roasts and where the beans come from. And this is exactly the kind of change of pace I needed. Brenton wanted me on to obviously talk about tech and LG, but I needed a bit of a reset. Like, I became the guy to give quotes and jump on other folks' podcasts and videos to really talk about LG. It was refreshing to be like, so what's your favorite tip about coffee? And like, oh, well, I would recommend having a coffee buddy and, you know, sharing the social experience of consuming something that like tells a story through your senses. I'm such a knob, but I love coffee. Even for only getting two main videos out and the audio. Well, actually, no. I mean, I got two videos out in the audio deep dive, and I was on another podcast, and I did a lot of writing. I'm through shooting the main talking to camera portion of my OnePlus 9 Pro camera review, and then I've got a side video for camera performance on the OnePlus 9. So that's going to take up a huge chunk of my week this week. So there probably won't be a ton of videos out. I might play with a few more shorts just to kind of keep on the pulse with some of my little accessories coverage and stuff. But it was a busier week than it seemed trying to get through everything last week. So folks, everything that we've talked about for the housekeeping and everything that we're going to talk about, all of the links, all of the show notes will be available after the audio version goes live on this podcast, somegadgetguy.com. Nick Fell is on coffee number 5 for the day. And I might be joining you. This feels like it might be, this might be a multiple return trip to my drip coffee brewer just to kind of keep rolling on what's going on here. And McCorkran 3, you know, talking about some of the other coverage on LG devices, that's why I would recommend checking out some of the audiophile videos. I can't remember who it was, but brought up a similar thing. You know, I was watching this very popular tech commentator, and he never mentioned the quad DAC in his goodbye LG video. It's like a major component of what makes LG special. And I'm doing a terrible job of impersonating him. But I feel like those of us, especially if you've been watching content like mine and, you know, you weren't interested in buying an LG, but you were still interested in tech and competition, it wasn't painful to admit that LG was a champ at audio. Instead, we saw so many techies just, no, but no one cares about that. and just brush it aside. And you're like, you're missing these communities that actually do care about the more well-rounded conversation about what makes a device unique. If you're only commenting on, these are the things that this phone does the same as a Sam Apple, but you should just buy a Sam Apple, then that is a very vice grip, blinders on kind of tech conversation. And I think that's why so many people kind of leave our community, and we're not bringing in as many people to kind of replenish those ranks.
Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on r glowing rectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
Awesome Possum, totally agree. Coffee is king. Dave Burns. I mean, I think that starter pack showed what other technology hobbyists think of the YT tech crowd. And they don't think highly of us, and deservedly. So, sorry. I got a note to stretch, and I haven't stretched. I'm going to stretch. And Clifton, I can kind of back that too. Can we not flame other creators here, please? You'll notice I am very critical of review trends. I really don't like ginning up drama, individual YouTuber to YouTuber, individual reviewer to reviewer drama. What I hope to accomplish by bringing this kind of commentary up is that we as a tech community recognize the trends of how media and manufacturers influence algorithms to train audiences to only accept binary choices. And I feel we can do that, and we can be extremely critical, and I feel we can be very harsh, but without necessarily stomping on one individual creator for exemplifying that trend. It was why I got such a sick feeling out of writing that editorial I did on the Xperia 5 Mark II, review of a review, which wasn't really a review, but was commentary and was sort of lazily and shoddily produced. Immediately when I finished that article, I got about a half dozen DMs. You need to turn this into a video. You need to do a follow-up. You need to check out this other guy. He also doesn't review Sony properly. You need to reach out to this sponsor because they need to know that this channel is putting out shoddy commentary. Like, people wanted me to watchdog and go after another channel's sponsorships because of this commentary. You know, my point in writing that editorial was to show how hyper clear and specific these bad trends are. I feel we can call out the trends, and I feel we should call out the trends, and I feel like we should rise to higher commentary. But this notion, like, well, you just do you. You just make what you make, and you know, like, the cream rises to the top, and you're like, that doesn't exist. That's not real. I definitely sound bitter because, like, if I just make nice videos about the things I like and tell you what's cool about them, my comments are just assailed with people that can't handle that I'm not making a video about the thing that they own, and I'm making videos about different things than what they own. And everyone announces their departure from my channel like they're some kind of airport, which I don't care. So that's why I tend to lean antagonistic, but I'm really not trying to fight person to person, reviewer to reviewer, because then it's not about tech. The trend in the media literacy about what we do is part of the tech. How we use social media on our phones is a part of the tech.
But if it's more just, Juan's got beef with this other reviewer, ooh, let's watch. Then basically what you're asking for is us to harm our mental well-being to feed you entertainment. And that's not what I'm about. So let me take another sip of water here. Yes, bad trends need to be examined. Let's get through news, because I'm already running a half hour into this podcast, and I only have a couple news stories here. And one of them is amazeballs, and gives me like what little hope for humanity I can still muster these days. First, there's a news story about politics and broadband, so you know I had to cover it. I was not expecting this to pass, actually. But this is a New York State bill, and it was just signed off by Governor Cuomo. And I'm a little mixed feeling on this, but I'm hoping it sets the stage for a more federal response, a more FCC response. Governor Cuomo signs legislation establishing first-in-the-nation program to provide affordable internet to low-income families. Program requires internet service providers to offer an affordable $15 per month high-speed internet plan to low-income households as proposed in the governor's 2021 State of the State. When this bill went up, I really didn't think, like even in New York, that this would get pushed through. And I'm of two minds of this. One, I would prefer to see New York State find other incentives for competition. When we see a bill that directly targets how much an individual company can charge for a service, I think it kind of speaks to how little competition that market has. And when we look at some of the experiments for things like municipal broadband, you know, or when an outside player can come in and roll fiber, and it's not against one of the state laws to have two competing internet service providers in one area, that's the only time that we really see a true market-driven approach to improving service and dropping prices. Either the people of that area roll their own fiber and do a municipal broadband rollout, or the state opens up incentives to force another company into a competitive stance. Or they allow like a Google Fiber to roll into an area and then the market gets shook up. It's not going to come immediately from satellite. It's not going to come immediately from other terrestrial or 5G style solutions. At this point, I feel like the internet's savior is probably going to be taxpayer funded municipal broadband. If we can't get companies to really come in and compete, or they enter the area, but then they like half-heartedly dump some low-level DSL. You know, like, oh, you've got your choice. You can go Comcast or AT&T. They're the same price. They're broadband internets. And you're like, well, yeah, but one's cable and the other's DSL. Oh, no, that's competition. That's not competition. But one of the interesting things about the way that this bill is formatted is that there's a clause in here. I've got to see if I can scroll down and find this. Do, 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 do. Bum, 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 bum. It's not in their official right here. I completely lost my place from rebooting my computer, and I apologize here. So I'll just have to summarize this because I can't find where it is in this press release, but it will be in the show notes on this week's episode. One of the interesting things about this bill is that it's also setting up a tier where the $15 a month that a low-income consumer might be able to qualify for, what they're expecting is either the faster of the two for the average speeds that ISP can offer in an area, or the FCC definition of broadband, whichever's faster. And that's a critical, and I'll be very curious to see how this plays out and whether or not this is challenged. The FCC definition of broadband is very slow. It's 25 megabit downloads. I mean, it's really not competitive on the global stage, and that's high speed as defined by our current regulatory body that oversees the internet. But if the faster of those two is, you know, the average speeds in your area are more like 50 megabit or 100 megabit, you have to be able to offer a plan that $15 a month. What this might create, though, we know that the FCC is looking to expand the definition of broadband. So if you want to offer a service and call it high-speed internet, right now we're seeing pressure to raise that cap to 100 megabit symmetrical. And if that's the case, then people who are on one of these affordable $15 a month plans, if the FCC raises that definition and New York's law takes into account the FCC definition but doesn't clearly define it by today's standards, then someone who needs help in the state of New York might eventually have access to a $15 a month internet plan with symmetrical 100 megabit connections. So that to me is what's kind of interesting here. What we need to see is I feel more federal regulatory pressure on defining broadband, categorizing it correctly as a telecommunication service, getting back to some of the low level sort of global rules for net neutrality. And then from there, I think we've got better inroads to start expanding on our funding for rollouts. You know, the Biden administration is talking about billions of dollars of infrastructure, and broadband's going to be a part of that. But until we can qualify improvements, make sure everybody has some access to something faster than, you know, like dial up and has affordable access to that, then we're not really making anything better for anyone. Oh, yeah. And Comcast is definitely there's some chatter in here about Comcast also putting caps back on their residential broadband. So short story, really long. I didn't really plan on spending that much time on it, but we all knew I was going to ramble on about internet. Definitely keep an eye. California and New York are going to be defining the next steps of the telecommunications industry. Until we deliver a mandate back to the FCC to have some kind of regulatory oversight over how business is conducted online and how consumers connect to the internet to do business online, it's going to be on the states. And the two states with kind of the most money, the population density, the infrastructure, the varying communities. There are very rural areas of California and New York. There are very urban areas of California and New York. Those two on opposite ends of the country are going to have the biggest impact on what happens in the middle of the country if we can't define some federal standard. So how about something a little lighter for a second news story? Something that is not really going to apply to many more people than me, but you're on my podcast, so I've got to share this. Excuse me. How about some talk over video codecs and video APIs? This was a crazy little announcement. So this is coming by way of XDA developers written up by Corbin Davenport. The Vulkan Video API could help video editors be less terrible. So, I mean, that's kind of an outrage title, because like if you've been using the most recent updates to PowerDirector and KineMaster, like those apps have gotten surprisingly good. I digress. The rest of the article has legit substance to it. And so the final spec for Vulkan, which is a graphics framework, right here. Is cross-platform competitor to Microsoft's DirectX, becoming the true successor to the aging OpenGL architecture. The spec was finalized a year ago, but they're now announcing professional Vulkan video acceleration extensions. So I'm not going to spend a ton of time on this because I totally understand why people's eyes are likely rolling into the back of their skull. What we're looking at is better hardware support for apps to utilize the GPU components in mobile devices and ARM devices and anything that has support for Vulkan to leverage that hardware for video acceleration or some type of video manipulation. So much lower CPU overhead, better utilization of GPU hardware make everyone happy. So it's kind of like when on desktops, we started going from CPU rendering to GPU rendering, and just how much faster and smoother and the power overhead, like everything got better. And the same thing, you know, like I now cut out of DaVinci Resolve. I haven't found anything that really leverages my GPU as well as Resolve does. So when I'm going through my timeline with 4K 60 frame per second video, 8K footage from phones, and I can hear the fans on my GPU are definitely spinning up, but it's functional and I can really scrub that timeline and I can really follow what's going on. This would be really killer to see this type of hardware utilization finally make it to phones. Your ability to craft content, manipulate content, slice together a quick TikTok, get in, get out. I mean, it's already impressive what we can do with a phone. If this completely wrecks all of my smartphone benchmarks, it will make me so happy. it would just like, this would be an evolutionary leap over what we were capable of before. So lots of support for other video formats, codecs. This would be the right time to give it a nudge. Dave Burns. Yeah, but people don't do stuff on their phones, you silly goose. I just make cool videos in TikTok. That's not video editing. Yeah, I get that a lot. Oh, Gary the Fireman is saying the township I live in gave Cablevision, now Optimum Altice, I don't know what that company is, a 100-year exclusive for cable TV. I cannot get Fios even if I wanted it. Holy snap. See, you know, when we talk about like broadband at the city level, at the township level, at the state level, it takes so little for a mega corporation to roll in, help guide some legislation, and then roll right on out and have some kind of exclusivity in a very monopolistic fashion. And that's really sad, man. I'm sorry to hear that. So the big news, and this is the top news story of the week. If you're a nerd, I can't think of anything cooler. We're flying helicopters on Mars. I'm gonna go back here. We have a successful launch of a helicopter on another planet. We are airborne with robots on Mars. Ingenuity. A technology demonstration to test the first powered flight on Mars. The helicopter rode to Mars attached to the belly of the Perseverance rover. We had a successful launch. It went airborne. I'm blown away. The magic of what we have accomplished and what NASA has achieved here just blows my mind. And that we're getting video back from it, that we'll be able to utilize this in future explorations of other. Growing up and watching way too much science fiction, you know, one of the things that like kind of blows about the charm of shows like Star Trek is, for very good reasons, and especially with the technology for storytelling that we had at the time, a lot of those TV shows and movies had to sort of abbreviate space. You know, Star Trek makes space not very scary. You know, the actual danger of space travel is very rarely explored in a show like Star Trek. And just how incredibly complex, very basic navigation, very basic, you know, life support issues. You know, Star Trek had to come up with magic to overcome the problem of inertia, right? You know, like if you had engines that could very quickly propel your ship to like one quarter the speed of light, if you just pushed the go button, any human life on that ship would just be slammed against the back wall and would turn into jello. Like you would liquefy everybody on that ship. And so Star Trek had to come up with a solution around that through techno jargon and gobbledygook. And we've got a deflector grid and inertia dampeners. There you go. We dampen inertia. That's magic. You might as well have like a wizard with a staff on the bridge of the Enterprise every single time they need to use an impulse engine. When you really break down just how many agencies had to get involved, the insane number of people working together to collaborate on the hardware, on the software, on just doing that work so that we could get a goofy little helicopter drone on another planet. And then not even knowing, you know, like, we had a pretty good idea. It should fly. They did a couple test spin-ups of the blades. You don't know until you really do it. And then you do it and it works and it's successful. And that's amazing. Especially for anyone who's watching this right now. I'm really going to be working to end my podcast hard at 2 hours. At 11 a.m. Pacific time, as soon as my podcast is over, so definitely stay tuned for the rest of the podcast here, NASA is going to do a follow-up briefing on the first flight. And I hope everyone here will check it out. If you're catching this on the replay crew, or if you're listening to the audio version of this podcast, go to mars.nasa.gov. And again, it's going to be in the show notes. But catch this media. You know, the follow up, the briefing. Like, this is an incredible accomplishment, and the team at NASA. I'm sure the team at NASA and their families are just over the moon that this was a successful flight. This is a drone version of the Wright brothers on Mars. You know, like, we've had things rolling around on Mars. It's the first thing to fly on Mars. And it just kind of lights me up in that little kid kind of way. Like, this is the real magic. This is, you know, like, it's not magic. You know, like, we actually did it. It's not inertia dampeners on the Enterprise. So, mars.nasa.gov. So much media here too. And even just silly things, you know, like, I might do this with Lex. The little paper craft, you know, activities for kids, code a Mars helicopter video game, or how to make your own paper helicopter. And like, you know, I think I'm going to share this with my daughter. I think this is definitely something that we need to do. So, that's all the news. That's our news block. It ran longer than I wanted it to, but, 11 a.m. after this podcast, NASA briefing, I'm there. I hope you will be there too. Excuse me. Let's take a quick break here just to chat out the subreddit. My links are all reloading right now. So let me make sure that, yeah, there we go. Okay. Every podcast has a subreddit. Mine is no exception. And if you go to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, you're going to see a community of folks trying to share content that they feel deserves more attention. And that's the focus. It's not, you know, send me cool news clips or let me make a fan page for my podcast. It's really, can we make a broader coalition of tech reviewers, commentators, people doing fun things with technology, and share that in a way where we can kind of help give channels a nudge when we feel they deserve a nudge. Because it's definitely not the current flavor of YouTube helping people build and grow or even just sustain. So reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. We're comfortably over 1,700 subscribers now. It's a true grassroots, you know, person by person, article by article, video by video. And it's growing, and I love it. And this is now more often where I'm going to find tech commentary than what YouTube is giving me in my feed. So number one, with a bullet, I don't know if Matt Tyler is still in the live chat, but some punchable face dude with a really cool flat cap is the number one video this week. Ooh, ooh! OnePlus 9 Pro throttled. So my video talking about my performance testing issues on the OnePlus 9 Pro definitely took the top spot because I'm awesome. I love it. Number two, Techspert, sharing some thoughts on the Xperia 1 Mark III, looking at the announcement and just kind of giving us a reaction. The number three position, Google and Sony team up to add 360 reality audio. An article from XDA developers talking about speaker tech and audio tech coming from Sony and Google. Definitely a good read if you care about audio, because Sony is contributing a lot of media expertise to Android right now. I wonder why Sony might be interested in sprucing up Android's ability to deliver good audio and video. Just rounding out the podcast last week actually made an appearance. The podcasts usually don't score as well, but in the number four position. And in the top five, we round out with Adam Reviews Tech, looking at the iPhone 11 Pro versus the Pro Max in 2021. And then just some fun things, like I shared a video on smoothing out the frame rate of stop motion animation. So what if Jason and the Argonauts was a 120 frame per second movie instead of a 24 frame per second movie? Someone shared this, Tech Space Cowboy, a channel that I was not familiar with before, took a look back at the Microsoft Duo. We've got Josh Vergara sharing some concerns over the Poco F3, my Amazfit T-Rex, some people talking about the LG Wing on sale, someone else sharing their thoughts on buying their last LG. They opted for the V60, OnePlus 9 versus Pixel 4a camera comparison from Fandroid. And a lot of Xperia 1 Mark III commentary just throughout the week. So it was a real busy week. These last couple weeks have been real busy weeks on reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. And like I said, I'm finding real cool stuff that I'm really digging. Aditya Anil, Adam Dowd's S21 versus iPhone 12 Pro video was really good. The commentary was well-paced and informative with real-life use anecdotes. We need more of that. And you will not find more of that just casually browsing YouTube. No, you've got to go out of your way to seek out communities of people that are actually gonna kind of, you know, serve this stuff up to you and help you find it. Because every time I subscribe to, I got to go down to Tech Space Cowboy has 2,500 subscribers, and I clicked on his channel. And after I clicked on subscribe on his channel, YouTube recommended that I also check out Dave2D. Well, if you like tech commentary, you would rather watch tech commentary from this guy with millions of subscribers, right? And again, if you look at my subscribers, the channels that I subscribe to, I cannot give YouTube better data that I am actively trying to find medium-sized and smaller channels. Like, that is my... That is my driving challenge. That what I'm trying to achieve by seeking out tech commentary on YouTube every single time. Well, you must want to follow Unbox Therapy. You like tech, and it's so gross. The algorithm is really not taking my viewing into consideration, and it really is just whatever's most popular, because that's going to be easiest for us to kind of spoon feed the broadest audience. So go to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and you're going to find a much different flavor of that kind of tech commentary and a community of people that are actively trying to share a broader look at consumer electronics. Tech Lovin' Mama, when I see my videos being shared on Glowing Rectangles, it's cool. I appreciate that you have this available to all of us. Please. Again, we're getting more submissions. We're starting to see more upvotes, especially top posts hitting double digit, you know, upvotes. We need the participation. You know, sharing is always critical. Sharing on other social media services, sharing on other subreddits, like you can cross post. You go to Glowing Rectangles and you see an article and you're like, oh, you know what? This would be a great fit for this other subreddit or this other community. You know, don't just share the link, but cross post and make sure that you're sort of using that. And then the more you share on Glowing Rectangles, the more karma you're going to build. People take you more seriously on Reddit. It's a whole thing unto itself. But, you know, it's definitely a resource to help build a community. And then also try and get folks active. If you care about this, it's not just enough to passively watch anymore. Like that doesn't move the needle. It's getting in there and participating, upvoting, commenting, sharing. We need all the help we can get. Literally, like that's what's going to make the difference between finding more tech chat and instead just relying on a couple temp poll channels, and that's all you're really going to see. So, last plug, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and tell them one sent you, because I'm like the top mod there. So I'll know I sent me to you to me. It's great. All right.
Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Hey, it's Sam.
And this is Matt.
And we're Across the Podcast with Sam and Matt, the best podcast you never heard of. Tune in every Sunday at 3 p.m. Central Standard, 9 p.m. BST in the UK, for a lot of talk about tech and food and football. Not the right kind, the wrong kind.
Not hand egg.
Not hand egg.
Nope.
It's a good time. We talk to guests. Sometimes we just talk to each other, but just about whatever the hell comes on our show. You should come check it out. It's on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. What else? Twitch. It's on Twitch, right?
Pretty sure it's on Twitch, yeah.
Yeah, it's on Twitch. YouTube? It's on the YouTubes?
Yeah, it's on the YouTubes. Generally just everywhere.
Right. It's everywhere, and everyone should be listening. So if you haven't paid attention, you should pay attention. It's Matt. It's Sam. AcrossThePodcast.com. Go check it out. What else you got to do? I mean, it's Sunday. Not like you got family or nothing. All right.
Nope.
Be good. Enjoy your tech. Enjoy your year. Bye, everybody.
Stay safe.
Yeah, do that too. Wear a mask.
Simon says, Hypno, I know that pain. I can't even watch any political commentaries without YouTube filling my feed with extreme right or left-wing videos. I watched someone sort of deep dive, it's a documentary. I mean, it really is. It's like 90 minutes long. And talking about flat earthers. This is beautifully produced, goes down the rabbit hole, really speaks to the philosophy of this kind of groupthink and the spread of bad information and how it can kind of corrupt people that are naturally curious and are intellectually, you know, curious about how the world works, but then kind of pollutes them with, you know, bad assumptions and makes them much more susceptible to really terrible alternative reality thinking. And now my YouTube recommendations are a hot mess. I watched one video and I can look at, oh no, oh no. Oh, I don't want to watch another video about incels. Oh no, what did you do, YouTube? And this is like when I like unplug out of everything from YouTube and then just like, I just want to watch short horror films. I'm just going to do nothing but watch short horror films and like, yeah, movie reviews, because I've got to like trick the algorithm into not trying to recommend stuff. And Saeed Ted is saying, got to actively engage. So, yeah, it's a biggie. Oh, Fat Produce is listening to this while packing. That must mean that Fat Produce is moving to his new place and everyone needs to give him a huge hearty congratulations, because I got to see a picture of his new house and it looks pretty sweet. So, from Alice Bockley, most of today's news is short horror films. This is true. All right, let's jump into the gadget block here, because I want to save, you know, the bulk of the time for talking about camera tech and Xperia. This just seemed like an oddity, and I'd be curious. Let me get some comments on what you think. If you run a service, is hardware a thing for you? Like Snapchat. Snapchat is this social media service. It's about sharing snippets of video and they tried, I honestly don't even know if they still sell them, but the Snapchat spectacles were a thing that were really exciting for just a hot minute, you know, having little cameras right at eye level for a different type of, you know, more organic first person sharing of media and content. Is that a sign of your service growing and that it's healthy and that you're looking at alternative revenue streams and bringing people in with novel hardware experiences? Or is that a sign that your service is kind of struggling and you're trying to find a novelty which is going to get people talking and interested in this? Because I'm curious, why now is the right time for Spotify to launch the car thing? This is from carthing.spotify.com. Say hi to Car Thing, the smart player from Spotify that fills your car with music, news, entertainment, talk, and more. And it's basically a little rectangle with a knob that you can use to scroll through stuff on the screen. And it connects to your phone, uses your phone's data to stream Spotify to your car stereo. I'm not entirely sure. Well, first of all, I don't want to knock it. I mean, this could be really cool. I have family that are still using like little XM radio receivers, right? There is something kind of interesting about having a dedicated, focused hardware interface for fill in the blank. And so something like this immediately recalls like those little XM satellite radio receivers, but it's for Spotify. But when we're talking about integrating into a car, like they show it on a little dash mount connected to an air conditioner vent. Well, that's kind of where I already put my phone. So if I already have my phone mounted above my car's terrible entertainment system, I don't have room. I don't have a place to put the car thing. And so it's supposed to integrate into Android Auto and Apple CarPlay. You know, you can plug it into like the USB or the if you have an auxiliary jack, like a headphone jack in your car, you can plug it in that way. And then it connects to the data that your phone uses to stream this over. So I'm just kind of curious. You know, there's a part of me that wants to be really excited about a service coming up with a hardware specific interaction. At the same time, I get twitchy because it's kind of what my phone already does. And it obviously my phone does not have big tactile knob and click. Knob and click is really handy in an automobile. I do like knob and click for operating something when I'm supposed to also be keeping my eyes on the road. But minus knob and click, I feel like my phone is already taking that physical location. So I'm torn. I really want to be more excited about the novelty of this. I really want to be more interested in a first hardware play from a software service, but is this the thing? Is this what, cuz you know, in my brain I feel like the missed opportunity is a Spotify collaboration or a Spotify line of audio reproduction hardware, you know, like a Spotify Bluetooth speaker, a Spotify pair of headphones, a Spotify Bluetooth DAC, you know, maybe not even making their own, like license some stuff out from Theo and sell that as part of like a Spotify kit. And oh, if you want to listen in higher quality and you're paying for Spotify premium, these are some solutions and you can do this through our store and we'll put a little Spotify sticker on there because that's where you got it from. I feel like there's hardware that's being overlooked, and and please tell me in the chat if you think I'm totally off base here, if you think I'm totally wrong, but I'm not sure that solving the car playing situation was really the hurdle preventing people from enjoying Spotify to their maximum. From JJ, I think they're aiming at older cars with no media console. I don't know that they are. When one of the major talking points is, hey, you can plug this into the USB port of your car, which supports Android Auto or Apple CarPlay, I don't think that's the killer hook, and that this does need to be powered some way. And so if you don't have the USB accessibility, then you've got to plug it in through the cigarette lighter port and then also connect a 3.5 millimeter cable to an auxiliary jack, and your car has to have that. It really does seem that like the preferred connection is USB, which I'm not sure is an older phone focus. Because if it were just Bluetooth, then again, your phone would just connect to the Bluetooth of a car. So again, it's I'm not grokking it, and I feel like I'm missing something. From Clifton Thomas, this feels like such limited appeal when most new vehicles have Android Auto and Apple CarPlay integrated. My car doesn't. My Nissan has a terrible in-dash entertainment system, but it does have USB connectivity, which works with some devices, and it does have an auxiliary port, and it has Bluetooth. So again, when I need to bump some tunes, my phone connects fast to Bluetooth, and that's generally fine when you're fighting road noise and you just want to kind of stream some audio. Aditya Anil is kind of in the same boat as me. Why does this exist? Doesn't our phone do the same thing? Simon says Hypno. Okay, so this is a different perspective. The Echo Auto for $25 was a boon for our old van. It worked a treat. Something like that actually makes a little bit of sense. I'd be curious, like, how the Echo Auto compares to something like this. Because there's no battery. I don't think it's got Bluetooth for connecting to the car. It's got antennas so that you can deliver voice actions to control your music, which I guess that's cool. If you can play music from your phone on your car stereo today, it will. Okay, so this will work using a USB outlet, Bluetooth, and aux. So it does. It will also connect to a car over Bluetooth. But so you connect this to your phone. So you connect it to the phone. I'm assuming you would use that with Bluetooth for the data connection, and then it connects to your car over Bluetooth. Again, it just seems like such an odd middleman. I'm much confused. And McCorkran's been using Amazon Music HD for quite a bit. Let's see. Dave Burns, I left Spotify a long time ago. I really am not a big fan of music streaming. I like owning my own media. I do both. So I do like music streaming just in a pinch. I'm not paying for any service at present. I know that's terrible, and it gives the artists even less money when it's just ad supported. But I also keep a huge music collection of the content that I really, really, really love. So I like streaming for filling in the gaps, but you know, my car has a USB plug that reads flash drives, and I just keep a monster flash drive full so that I always have a music library at the ready, no matter what my data connection is looking like. And Dave Burns, streaming on Plex has been pretty eye-opening. Totally agree. If you're managing your own media server and you're using a service like Plex, you see the competitive edge of kind of curating your own collection, and the soundtracking of other services becomes a little less, I don't know. It's like a little less competitive, you know, like the ease of use. I totally get it. And someone doesn't want to build a music collection. Like, I've been ripping CDs and trying to find 24-bit FLAC downloads. Totally get it. But if you've been doing that, that's kind of where I lean the heaviest. From Kyotura Santi, it looks interesting, but I already use the aux on my V60. Fair enough. Fat Produce, I got to try out Android Auto in my dad's truck dash via USB for the first time, and it was a great experience. I'm really glad to hear that. Sorry, I'm catching up on the rest of the chat here. From JJ, do you think Spotify would cater more software support than the standard infotainment system? I'm not entirely sure what you're asking there. This is what's also kind of tricky about a first-gen product is, what is the update situation going to look like? How is this thing going to be maintenanced? Obviously, it's going to have some issues when it first launches. All new products do. It's just, I don't know. I'm spending way too much time on this than I really intended to, but it keeps bringing up more questions, and I'm kind of trying to fit my brain around who is the right person for this, and I'm not sure who that person is, so it's causing a bit of a lockup in my brain. Awesome possum. Some gadget guy ready to DJ at a moment's notice. My very eclectic and broad but shallow musical tastes would make for terrible DJing. I DJed my uncle's wedding, and I am not a DJ. And I think I did okay. I don't think I was terrible. I don't think I was great. All right. So who wants to chat about the Xperia? I have been struggling to kind of plan out my year. The last 2 years, I've had a format for certain phones arriving at certain times. And, excuse me, one of my favorite showdowns, my favorite head to heads over these last 2 years has been LG versus Sony. So from the V50 versus the Xperia 1 Mark 1 to the V60 versus the Xperia 1 Mark 2, increasingly watching these phones do battle in a high-level content creator, multimedia-focused kind of way, but still with very different ways of achieving that. Like, the V50 versus the Xperia 1 Mark 1, I would still say both of those phones are creator-focused phones that have some great things to offer multimedia and gaming. But they go about it in very different ways. And over these last 2 years, 2019, 2020, that was the most exciting part of this conversation, is that it's not like we got to creator phone and then there was only one way to do that. Xperia 1 Mark 2 versus V60, likewise, very different usage scenarios where I would feel more comfortable recommending one phone over the other. And I feel like the Xperia 1 Mark 2, more of a storyteller, a narrative, finding those opportunities to craft a piece of content, and you're really the guy behind the camera. V60, much better run and gun, newsier, vloggier, YouTubery kinds of content, the preferred solution. So there's never been this like, well, you know, if you have a phone for gaming, we kind of get like what that's gonna be. You know, better attention to thermals, bigger batteries, and then chunky Mountain Dew fueled design. Content creation versus mobile journalism versus short films and storytelling versus documentary versus all of these different ways that we create versus podcasts, how you record audio. All these things are tackled in very different ways. And, you know, now we don't have the LG version of that coming this year. But, you know, kicking this off, you know, one of the things that we're starting to get some info on, this obviously hasn't been officially confirmed, but this has kind of fallen in line with what I was thinking we would arrive at. Sony Xperia 1 Mark III arrives for pre-order in Russia at $1,300. So we don't know what pricing is going to look like internationally or in the United States, but this is kind of in line with where I thought Sony would go. So this is written up by Jordan over at GSM Arena. Sony announced its third generation of Xperia 1 and Xperia 5 flagships yesterday, stayed silent on pricing and availability. However, now the two phones are listed for pre-order on Sony Russia's official store, along with their pricing. Xperia 1 Mark III is $1,300, while the Xperia 5 is just over $1,100. And so they actually list the prices in Russian rubles. We're looking at around 1,100 euro for the Xperia 1 Mark III with 12 gigs of RAM and 256 gigabytes of storage. Importantly, Sony will throw in a pair of WF-1000XM3 earphones for free. Well, they're not really throwing it in for free because you're paying $1,300 for a phone. But this is kind of where I was thinking Sony was going to land. I was very frustrated after the Sony announcement to see so many techies basically say the quiet parts out loud. Oh, look, Sony's announcing early, but we don't know when they'll actually ship. Well, what a fail. There's going to be no excitement over this phone. And you're like, you can still be excited about a phone that announces early and ships late. That's on you. You know, don't get me wrong. I'm annoyed that Sony marketing probably won't give this a big spectacle of a launch when it really launches in our region. You know, like, we're not going to see Sony Xperia billboards in the United States. We're not going to see Sony Xperia television commercials. That's what I want. I don't care when you announce. I'd love to see the company make more noise in traditional advertising and marketing when it's available to buy. We know Sony probably won't. But to then say, because Sony isn't going to make more, isn't going to spend billions of dollars on marketing, there's no reason to get excited about this phone, is so incorrect. Sony has to announce earlier than they can really ship because they're going to continuously cede room to competitors. At least now, the sort of cadre of Sony smartphone shoppers, where Sony's smartphone division is profitable, it is making money, they know there's a phone to wait for, and they know it's a Sony premium tier device. And when you talk about Samsung in the premium tier space, you talk about a very stratified experience. From Galaxy S21 to S21 Ultra, they're very different phones. They really shouldn't be called S21s. The experience is so markedly and starkly different, from build material to capabilities to camera quality. They're not the same. But that gives Samsung the room to say S21s start at like $700. But not really, because your S21 Ultra is not the same device. So there's a little DNA being shared. We know Sony's not going to play that game. There are going to be a trio of phones, an Xperia 10, Xperia 5, Xperia 1. You know, that's the order, from mid-ranger to premium consumer to ultra high-end. And that's where Sony plays. So when we talk about premium, especially in a consumer-facing device, but with a heavy focus on cameras and optics, it makes a ton of sense to me. It makes a ton of sense to me that they're not going to whittle stuff back and then just try and compete on mid-ranger pricing. That's not Sony. They're a very baller and kind of arrogant company. You know, this is the company that told people you should want to save up. You should want to save your money to get one of these PlayStation 3s. It's going to be a very expensive console. You know, we're not going to make a cheaper console. We're Sony. And whether or not you feel like Sony has the clout to do this in the phone space is all just a function of marketing. When people in this chat, I mean, obviously, for how much I've talked about why I liked LG smartphones, the Xperia becomes an immediate device to consider because it's more a phone for me. I don't want to give up memory card expansion. I don't want to give up a headphone jack. I prefer having a phone that has zero interruption, no punch hole, no notch. And I want a phone that's going to take power management and handling thermals more seriously than Samsung does. When we talk about Samsung arriving at a lower price point, they cut a lot of corners to get there. This is the only phone I'm seeing from sort of traditional manufacturers. Oh, you know what? I'll take that back. This phone and the ROG 5. That they're not only holding steady with their previous device, they're adding stuff to it. They're refining it. They're adding more and making it better, not just, oh, you got to go cheap. Now, Samsung set the price for a Snapdragon 888 at real cheap. So it's not worth considering any other phone because Samsungs are cheap. Just because you can save cash on a phone doesn't mean it's a better phone. So when I see this, you know, where the Xperia 1 Mark II was roughly a $1,200 device, adding better support for sub 6, I'm assuming we're going to see some consideration for Sony for thermal hardware. If it's like the vapor chamber that was in the Xperia Pro, that would be rad if we could really get that paired up with an 888. Seeing the next generation of power management and battery management, we're seeing a two-stage telescoping telephoto camera sensor. We're seeing improvements to video capture and content creation. And they're also refining some of their software. So, you know, some of the criticisms about not having the easiest auto mode, that's going to get rolled into the photo app and will hopefully help tech reviewers who never really use these things in earnest, but just like to complain about them. So every piece of this has gotten better. Every little section of this does seem to be an upgrade over the One Mark II. Where I'm concerned is also sort of vaguely where I'm concerned against Xiaomi's, against Galaxy's, against the OnePlus's. You need to work harder to make this chip run better. You need to build the phone around the Snapdragon 888 and really handle what that chip puts out. And if you don't, you end up with a much poorer experience consistently for longer term interactions and for sort of average performance over longer interactions than you did last year. That's maybe fine on a Samsung. I don't know. Reviewers who focus on Samsung seem to have a very low estimation of what consumers do on their phones. It's markedly more dangerous territory for a Sony. It's more dangerous territory because of all the work Sony has done in linking the Xperia division with their high-end camera division. A Sony Alpha consumer and a person who wants to be in the Sony ecosystem is going to have a very different expectation on performance over average consumers. When Sony says pro, they mean pro. And when you look at the way that they've even named their new phones, again, I'm loving all of the techies are going, oh, Xperia 1 III. I mean, how do you even say that? You're really bad at tech. It's like cameras. You know, if you go to a Canon 500D, that's an entry level device. The smaller the number gets, the better the phone, the better the camera gets, right? So 500D to 50D to 5D to 1D, that's a line of Canon cameras. That's all the explanation you need. Xperia 10 to Xperia 5 to Xperia 1. Easy. There it is. There's your explanation. And then you just have generation tick marks, you know, one in Xperia 1 Mark 1, Xperia 1 Mark 2, Xperia 1 Mark 3. It's really not that hard. So digging into what Sony announced, let me get a drink of water here. Oh, and Gabaletta, the space constraint in smartphones is evident and highlighted with the Snapdragon 865, even more so on the 888. We're reaching the point of needing active cooling to keep these SoCs cool. My concerns, first of all, if you build the phone properly around this chipset, it's not consistently a conversation about better than the 865. You do need to be a bit more selective. But often when you take into consideration optimization for a particular platform from a manufacturer, if you take that out, then, a OnePlus 9 Pro seems to consistently best the performance of 865s in a number of my tests. I know I did a video about how OnePlus was throttling graphics performance, right? Well, that comes down to what games you play. And there are ways that you can kind of get around some of that thermal throttling, but there are some really heavily demanding console and PC ports that you can play on Android where a Snapdragon 865 is floating around 40 frames per second. And the OnePlus can consistently over the same time period keep up at 60 frames per second, but a Galaxy S21 is going to crater to 30 frames per second. So again, if you build the phone around that heat properly, you will see benefits. You will see an upgrade, but it's hard to know. It's hard to know if the manufacturer really did their due diligence. You don't want to spend money on a phone, try to use it in a short, like, you know, you get a 2-week grace period before you need to return it. And then you're not really using the phone. You're testing the phone. You know what I mean? Like, you're not living with it. You don't know if it's really going to fit your needs because you got to spend all that time running benchmarks. When I run a OnePlus 9 through video editing and rendering, you know, when I run a OnePlus 9 through batch photo processing, which is very surprising. And this is also one of the things, like, Sony's were surprisingly good at manipulating RAW files from standalone cameras. And now the OnePlus 9 is my peak performer. And in a big batch of photos, it's running the fastest and the most consistently. So I have very high expectations on a $1,300 phone that Sony is going to address the real hardware of this. But that costs money. You can't do that on the cheap and still include, boundary pushing display tech and still include monster camera performance and still include better software support. You know, you can get incredible hardware on a gaming phone. I haven't seen evidence that software updates on gaming phones have gotten better. And there are some issues with, you know, like build quality and how these devices are constructed so that they can hit lower price points and still achieve this kind of gamer moniker and notoriety. So Sony is not playing that game. They're not going to try and sell a phone at margin. They're not going to try and sell a phone at cost. You know, they're not going to make a bunch of Xperias and then cut the price a week later and to try and entice consumers. This is going to be built in smaller batches. Smaller unit sales, specifically catering to folks that have a very different focus and expectation on mobile performance. I'm very excited about it, especially since I'm not on AT&T, which this increasingly seems like it's an AT&T problem. You know, OnePlus doesn't support AT&T 5G. I think it's the other way around. I feel like AT&T 5G is launching and rolling out in a way where manufacturers couldn't as easily support it, and those costs are high. So instead, wait another year until AT&T figures their ish out and then include better support for AT&T 5G. Dave Burns, AT&T doesn't support 5G.
Hey, podcast listeners, I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to SomeGadgetGuy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
And TK Bay. Everyone say hey to TK Bay. Thank you for jumping in, buddy. I appreciate it. Gaming phones update very slowly, sadly. So, yeah. I'm perusing over Xperia. I had another link up and now I can't. You know, let me just go back to the Sony site. We can check out the Sony gallery. Oh, these photos are going to look awful on my streaming setup. Hold on. Let me just go back to the Sony webpage. upgrades all around. Where I'm really excited. Sony's conversation about camera tech is a little different. I've been saying things, like, oh, well, what we're talking about is a higher tier of content creation, more cinematic, a more of a focus on narrative and storytelling. And so a part of this gets caught up in the expected use from a community of people who will probably better understand light. There have been a lot of criticisms. Let me kind of chew through the specifications and make sure I've got this correct, because I don't think we're going to see radical changes to the main camera sensors here. Hold on. I'm showing you text on the screen. You're not missing much if you're listening to the audio version of this. The rear camera is keeping a 12 megapixel resolution with a 1/1.7-inch sensor, 1.7 f/1.7 aperture, a 24 millimeter equivalent focal length. So this is the same main sensor size and resolution as what's in the Xperia 1 Mark II. It's very similar to the main sensor that's on the Galaxy S21. It's the same size sensor that's in the iPhone 12 Pro Max. So it's fine for a Samsung. It's fine for an iPhone. It's fine for the most expensive iPhone. Now, mind you don't get that sensor in the $1,000 iPhone 12 Pro. You only get that sensor in the 12 Pro Max. And I guarantee you, there are going to be people complaining that, well, Sony makes all these camera sensors. They should have put in a 48 megapixel even larger sensor. And they're not going to spell out the comparative differences of phones around $1,000 and phones around $1,100 to $1,200, like the iPhone. And they're only going to fixate on, but it needed the more megapixels. And I don't think that's what a proper camera-focused Sony device is really going to focus on. When you pick up an Xperia 1 Mark II, immediately you're struck by how scary, spooky fast the autofocus is. And at present, I'm not sure there are any super megapixel sensors that can achieve that kind of DPPDAF performance. And the software on tap, when it locks onto an animal's eye, I talk about like focus peaking and better visual indicators for how you can craft content and make sure that you're locking on what you think. Well, my daughter like runs into frame and you see this thing floating her face and then it goes and it's just on her eye. And it's tracking a 5-year-old bouncing around my living room, and it is scary accurate. So you keep that all consistent. If your focus is speed, accuracy, a better fidelity of image because of the focus performance and the ability to lock focus on moving targets, that's where you stay. That is the correct sensor to use to deliver the better camera experience. And so then you just... Why have a 12 megapixel this and a 13 megapixel ultra wide and a 16 megapixel zoom? Just make them all 12. So it does look like the telephoto sensor is getting a little bit of a nudge. I do believe that this is larger. I think the telephoto on the Xperia 1 Mark II was a smaller sensor. Someone please correct me if I'm wrong there. But it does have two distinctly different focal lengths, the equivalent of a 70 millimeter and a 105. So we'll have a true optical difference in the performance in the zoom, and then you'll be able to digitally crop a little further than that. Because I really feel like on the OnePlus 9 and the Xperia 1 Mark II, the weak spot has been the telephoto. I really think crop sensors are probably better performers overall. Like the sort of the up to around 10 times zoom, what you get out of an S21 easily beats around 10 times zoom on an Xperia 1 Mark II. Like it's pretty clear. It's pretty evident. So having this dual stage, you know, two distinctly different focal lengths that can kind of move back and forth, that helps. Like that definitely should help improve what we can do with the telephoto. And then what is the ultra wide? Yeah, same thing. So the ultra wide camera sensor is similar in size to the main camera sensor on a Pixel 5. It's a 1/2.5 inch, also 12 megapixels and around a 16 millimeter field of view. So that trio, very well understood, very well supported. And then also just, this is where like the bread and butter of Sony's camera software is nailing a camera feeling experience. And again, I was feeling really solid on it with the One Mark II. Everything here looks like it's better than on the One Mark III. hold on. From Zell Knight, 12 megapixel Sony isn't on the same level as a Samsung. Sony sucks. From Clifton Thomas, I'm glad they haven't gone to a new sensor set. Every new generation of sensor sets with any phone seems to suffer in the first gen. You know, this is one of the things like on a OnePlus, we're now into the third generation of pixel binning sensors. And I think OnePlus's computational photography game is a lot stronger than people are giving them credit for. Where we were from the OnePlus 7 Pro to the OnePlus 9 Pro, totally different animals. And I don't think the OnePlus 7 Pro was a garbage camera. It was just trickier to use and definitely had more issues with things like shutter lag. I think the shots you could get out of it were pretty good. It was just kind of the app could kind of get in your way more than you would want it to. I am not having those kinds of issues on a OnePlus 9. And more often than not, I look at similar performance, similar setups, you know, in my test photos, and liking so much better what OnePlus is doing with color science, with HDR, with highlight processing, and the raw capabilities are insane. So anyone saying like, oh, OnePlus still falls short is really bad at photography. I mean, you've got to be really bad at composing a shot to get poor images out of a OnePlus 9. Dave Burns, good luck trying to explain optics to number junkies. Well, but this is why we need to continuously kind of, push back against those lazy review tactics, because what you can do on a Sony is incredible, but it's a very different kind of conversation than trying to convince everyone that all they should care about is a pixel style auto shutter. You know, I'm not trying to sell my parents on Sonys. It's not the right fit for them. My dad is digging his Pixel 4a and my mom is kind of waffling back and forth. Like she's still totally fine on her OnePlus 6T. But she's not sure, like maybe she'll go OnePlus 9 or maybe she'll go Pixel 4a 5G. It's something, anything she can do to one up my dad, you know, like, well, my phone is a little nicer than yours is hilarious. They're such nerds. I love it. But she doesn't know. So it this is an opportunity, and it's sad because, you know, they're going to look at this like lowest common estimation of use. And we already see it. Like we see it on the OnePlus. Like, oh, well, camera's not good enough, because I looked at a pixel peeping review of the software in pre-beta state. You know, it was embargo launch software, and not good enough. I'll take the L, OnePlus. And I feel like Sony's going to get sucked into a very similar kind of conversation. We're not reviewing an Xperia 1 Mark III for what it is. We're reviewing it for what it's not. But then we've decided that it's already a loser. And like I said, kicking off this whole section on Sony, how many tech reviewers who were tweeting things like, I bet I could already write my review on this phone without even going hands on. Well, then that means you're really bad at your job. If that's really what you're able to glean from an announcement and you don't even need to use the phone to write up your stance on what it is going to represent, then you're basically tacitly admitting that you're only crafting content to satisfy the bias of a very particular audience, that you're not really judging these devices on their merit. And we know that that's kind of what YouTube sort of instills in creators, but it's rare. It makes me uncomfortable to see people so brazenly admitting, you know, again, saying the quiet parts out loud. And this is why, like, my OnePlus 9 Pro camera review is now going on to its fourth day of shooting and editing, because it also took several days just to shoot all the samples that I need. That's what it takes to review a camera. If you can't just spend 24/7, 365, you know, shooting content of you using this stuff, it takes time. And if you don't give it time, then you're not really getting a fair assessment of what this thing can do. Oh yeah, I'm way behind the chat. Hold on, give me just a second to catch up here. There was when TK joined. Yeah, from what is this? Mutilaturuk 19. I don't know how to say her name, and I'm sorry. The Sony Alpha team who designed the camera on the 1.3 said that they wanted it to feel consistent with the feel of changing lenses. And what's funny is that they're going to be in a race against OnePlus. You know, when you are shooting 4K 60 video on a OnePlus and you tap to go wide and it just zooms out, it just opens up the frame and you didn't have to stop recording. You know, that is a very subtle and smooth action that I love. And Sony trying to keep their image science, their color science, post-processing, all of that consistent against three very different sensors is a formidable challenge. From Heike, the autofocus was scary fast on the Xperia 1 Mark 1. Cannot imagine what it can be on a third generation. That's the thing I'm getting like the most lit up about. There's an issue on pixel binning and HDR. Capturing action is not the gig. You pick up a Note 20 Ultra or a Galaxy S21 Ultra, that is not a fast camera. And I feel Samsung gets some tough criticisms, but then it's still ultimately the phone that they're going to recommend over an Xperia. And if you are someone who's already a little bit more familiar with how cameras work, you've held a DSLR or a mirrorless camera sometime in your life and pushed a shutter button, you will appreciate how phenomenal it is to capture action of a little kid running around, to capture action of a pet bouncing through your living room. That is a tangible consumer perk that is totally going to get overlooked. DTNL, the more I hear about the 2021 flagships, the more excited I get. And Simon says Hypno. Again, I mean, I think the Pixel is a very good example of this. Simon says there's something to be said for not radically changing hardware and getting the most out of it. Optimization is a lot more difficult and a lot more valuable than I think techies are willing to extend. I'm not conflicted at all in recommending Pixels to average consumers. That is a peak of beautiful software and hardware optimization. And they're going to dig that camera in the vast majority of the shooting situations that they're likely to engage in. It's the right tool for that job. You know, in fact, in many ways, it bests the performance from larger sensors that kind of need a bit more handholding or get a bit goofier in super bright or high contrast situations. Pixel's got that down. And if you're telling me that average consumers want a casual point and shoot experience and you're sitting there and chuckling to yourself about how Pixels just aren't worth it, then you're bad at this. You're really bad at it. From Gabaletta, what's frustrating is that I know Sammy can do great autofocus. The problem has always been this race to impress consumers with a different feel every year, switching their camera app software that they have botched it on the still side. I do not like the direction Samsung has traveled with their camera app. And I would say like peak Samsung is S7 to S9. I still think the S7 camera app is the best camera app Samsung has ever made. It is simple. It is clean. They don't have that scrolling Rolodex of modes. Your viewfinder is far less interrupted. And the autofocus on an S7 is still, I think, is still better. The first generation of their DP-PDAF is better than what you can get on a Note 20 Ultra. If you care about locking, snapping quick, getting in, getting out, I still think an S7 can outperform some of their newer phones. The hardware on a Note 20 Ultra can deliver much better results in the extremes. Like if you push into really bright conditions or if you push into really low light conditions, that's where the a Note 20 Ultra is going to win. In that middle section, the smaller sensor is probably better for a lot of what people think that they care about in terms of photography. I just missed the from Doomer highlighting a message. You should consider looking at Fonton Camera, which is an open source camera with proper photo processing, and it's a good alternative to something like Gcam for regular shooting. If say you dislike how some OEMs have oversaturated colors, I'll check it out. I'm currently using Filmic First Light Manual Camera Pro, Open Camera, and I'm missing one. There's another, what is the MC24P for video? I can't remember what that app's name is, but I've got a short list of about five different camera apps that I kind of jump in and out of, depending on what it is that I'm trying to accomplish. from McCorkran 3, does the average consumer, can they even tell the difference between the OnePlus photos and the Samsung photos? The sort of short answer to that question is yes, but it's a side-by-side kind of experience. When I was testing the S21, I was showing my wife, like, look, this is a photo that was taken from the Galaxy, and here's a photo that was taken from the OnePlus 9. What I did most recently is I shot Lex wearing a new dress from both phones. The OnePlus 9, not the 9 Pro, the OnePlus 9 and the S21. And I just told her, you know, which photo. And she liked the photo that had darker shadows because it wasn't as bright in the background. And she's totally been listening to my camera commentary and my podcast. But that was obviously the OnePlus 9. So it wasn't about leading her to one phone. It was saying like, hey, these two similar conditions, what do you think? So there definitely is an emotional or, you know, you can recognize how different phones do different things in a very sort of Pepsi challenge kind of way. You're going to naturally kind of light up on the phone that gives you the brightest colorful image. And that's what's great for social media. If you're trying to stop someone while they're scrolling through Instagram, that makes a lot of sense. You want to try and hook them with bright, vivid image and then like, oh, maybe I'll check that out. You know, our primate brains kind of gravitate towards that. Beyond that, though, you know, in the Pepsi challenge, if you take just like a little sip of Pepsi and it's way sweeter than a Coca-Cola, you're going to go, that's it. That's the gig. My brain liked that surge, that zing. But if you drink an entire soda, maybe you don't want something that syrupy sweet. You kind of fall back and go like, oh, maybe I want something that's got a bit more kind of a different kind of flavor profile to it. And that's how I feel about Samsung's camera. I feel Samsung's camera heavily weights the expectation that this photo is only desirable for getting likes on social media. And if you're more interested in capturing family memories, doing prints, for our wedding anniversary, I did a photo book of the last year. I mean, this was kind of a big deal. I spent a week putting this book together and most of it is phone photography. But it's a year in quarantine. And I wanted to do something special because my wife and I had that conversation where like, we can't remember our wedding anniversary for 2020. There is no photo of it. There is no video of it. We didn't post anything really substantial on social media. That day is just gone. And so I made this photo book and it looks phenomenal, but none of those photos came from Samsung's. Lots of LG's, a couple of her photos from the Pixel later in the year. A couple of my photos from the 4A and the Pixel 5, and then some OnePluses. Like, there are actually quite a few photos from the OnePlus 8 Pro. But yeah, like, it's never as simple as, well, can they even tell? Well, of course they can, but they're not going to have the language to dissect, you know? Average consumers care very much about editing, but they don't talk about the structure filter and am I using this plugin and what about the saturation? Should I touch up the vibrance? They're using filters. You're using filters to abbreviate all of the granular little sliders, but they are still editing. Look at this explosion on platforms like TikTok. They care very much about video editing. They just don't go about, you know, oh, but Adobe Premiere, you know, like that's not their gig. So average consumers are creating content at a much higher level than we give them credit for. No, Sony still makes phones? You snarky guy, you. But across the board, I kind of just want to wrap this up a little bit. Oh yeah, we got about 10 minutes. So I want to wrap this up a little. The rest of what makes the Xperia 1 Mark III a unique option is why I'm seriously considering that this will probably end up being my actual work phone. Not just photography, but higher refresh rate display. That's kind of cool, but I'm really hoping they get after a brighter display. It's been one of the sticky spots on Sony's is it's a little tricky to see out in bright conditions. I'm always going to be interested in testing audio capabilities, stereo speakers, and a headphone jack. Like my guess is that the DAC will be good, but the amp might be a little weak. That seems to be what happened with my Xperia 1 Mark II. And then I'm really trying to think, you know, there are some opportunities for mobile broadcast. And I want to play a little bit more like we had with the Xperia Pro, plugging in a USB capture card, hooking it up to another camera, and taking some of the show more on the road. Because when I had the Xperia Pro, that worked way better than I thought it would. And that kind of immediacy, like not just broadcast from the phone, but then also incorporating a better camera, could be pretty incredible. So when we start looking at performance, when we start looking at battery technology, when we start looking at power management, when we start looking at making a pocket computer a more robust piece of someone's gadget kit, you know, their gadget outlay, that makes me a lot more excited than, well, they're charging less. I mean, they cut a bunch of stuff out that you like, but it's cheaper now. So yeah, I'm expecting the Xperia to be premium and then live up to it, because there are no other phones that don't have a hole punch or a notch, that have a headphone jack, that have a respectable amount of built-in storage, 256 gigabytes of built-in storage, and still include a memory card slot to add more. You got to pay for features. I do want to wrap this up just on one quick little story before I bounce and let everyone go catch that NASA thing. When we're talking about cameras, all the misconceptions and how tech reviewers get this stuff wrong so often, it'll be in the show notes, but this is a note from Filmic. It's a note on Filmic Pro version 6.14, where if you rely on the zoom lens as part of your current production, please disable auto updates under iOS settings and do not upgrade to the latest version, because they will be removing support for the telephoto lens on iPhones. And why would they do that? It's because there's a whole extra camera on your phone that doesn't get used as often as you think it does. And if you're ever in mixed lighting conditions, low light conditions, the phone kicks you back to the main camera sensor and crops down. That's a part of the iPhone's hardware that Filmic has no control over. And so instead of trying to fight the iPhone, they're just going to remove support for the telephoto lens. These types of things, this type of usage never really gets detailed. We just sort of look at what the phone does and we kind of blindly take some marketing slides as reality. And then we never test. We never dig deeper. This is why this stuff matters. The consumer experience, someone using Filmic is going to blame Filmic. Oh, but I was trying to do something and then it switched up and now I can't have control and I don't have access to these settings. What's going on, Filmic? Why is your app broken? And it's not. It's a problem with the iPhone. But the iPhone gets a pass on that because iPhone. And no one ever takes the time to really look at what's going on with the camera, dig any deeper, and explain there are compromises you make on every single platform. Samsung gets a pass. iPhones get passes because they do. So as just the last note to leave you off with, we're going to hear every complaint about how the Xperia 1 Mark III is too expensive. We've heard every complaint about how a OnePlus 9 Pro is just not good enough. So close OnePlus, but better luck next year. And basically any company that's not Samsung or Apple is in line to be the next whipping boy, automatic loser in all of these technology showdowns. They're not reviewing these products for what they are. They're reviewing them for what label is not on the side of the box. So we got to bounce. NASA, go hit that NASA press briefing. Go do it. What's the link? What's the link again? Mars.nasa.gov. I don't know why I can't remember that. Mars.nasa.gov. We flew a helicopter on another planet and we controlled it from Earth. I need you all to be super lit up about this. I can't be more excited about this if I tried. Mars.nasa.gov. So folks, thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you so much. Everybody that was supporting. I saw more tier one subs. I'm sorry. I was kind of jumping in and out of the chat and I didn't highlight you all as I should have, but you know, and Gary the Fireman giving out a bunch of tier one subs. I appreciate it so much. Keeping production rolling on this channel, supporting content creators that need the help, that need the attention, that need the action so they can keep up with what the work that they're doing too. Not just casually or lazily relying on Facebook style algorithms, but instead going out of your way to say, this person did a good job, check them out, means the world to any content creator and at any size, but especially someone that's really trying to get a leg up on their audience and build something unique for them. Joining these conversations means the world to me. So folks, I want you to have an amazing week. I want you to do awesome with your technology. I want you to be awesome with your technology. And I'll catch you back here next Monday for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. Be well, take care, stay safe out there. We're so close to figuring out the new normal. Now is not the time to be taking dumb risks. So keep your heads down. We're going to get through this together. I love y'all. Take care. I'll catch you back.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.